Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
What is this, amateur hour?
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour is the best podcast in the world. Yeah. Amateur hour is the best podcast in the world. Come on. Uh-huh. This is a show about the Chiefs, the football team that plays in Kansas City. Friendship and fun and stats that you won't believe. AHPKC will begin shortly. Hey, hey. Hey, Dirk. Are you ready? Let's do this thing. Come on, let's go. Let's go. It's football time. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. It is finally time for Amateur Hour. Third time's a charm. Having some technical difficulties to start the show today, but welcome to Amateur Hour, folks. I am Ryan Scott Hall, and I am joined today by off-season His Dirkness. We've been waiting for so long for off-season Dirk, and he's here.
What's up?
What's up, Dirk? Hey, how are you doing there?
Well, you've skipped a step in the Dirk process. There is hibernation Dirk before there is off-season Dirk. And it's a time where I crawl into a deep dark hole, and it's cold and it's gray, and it lasts me for the rest of my life. This week, at least.
Okay. Well, I guess you do like go full vacation Dirk, hibernation Dirk, completely disconnecting from all things Chiefs. But I feel like you're probably aware that the Chiefs did fire Bob Sutton, at least, right? You're plugged in enough to know that?
I have seen this. It brought a quick smile to my face. And then I've seen the list of candidates to replace him, and I have crawled back into the deep, dark hole that's going to last me for the rest of this week.
All right, well, that's fair. It seemed like you were at least, like, slightly excited about Rex Ryan out of the gate. Am I wrong?
No, I actually do like the idea of Rex Ryan. How long has it been since he's been in the league? 5 years? I mean, that would be the biggest problem, but... Right.
5 years?
Not even that long.
I thought he was in Buffalo in like 2015 or 16.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't know. The years are getting away from me at this point. But yeah, I like the idea of Rex Ryan. Just you could turn the entire defense over to him. He's aggressive. Sticks with the 3-4. I think there'd be some kind of similar elements, but I just don't think he'd be a little bit more fiery. I think the natural progression of coaching is to go from someone who's, you know, kind of understated and more of a teacher to someone who's going to motivate you and light a fire under your ass. And Rex Ryan seemed like he'd be that. And I'm just tired of, you know, the same old going down, kind of just the without letting it happen and not, you know, being proactive, being aggressive about it. And I don't think that would happen under Rex Ryan. We might go down for different reasons. But I don't think we'd go down that way again.
Yeah, I mean, Bob Sutton, obviously like a pretty subdued character over the past 6 years, never really bringing much passion or fire to the table, it seemed like. And I think that was in many ways reflected by the play of the Chiefs defense. One of the things that I think we've kind of been banging the drum for under Andy Reid, and I guess more importantly under Bob Sutton, is that the defense lacked an identity and that they lacked a fire and a passion on the field. And that even included, you know, having guys that
we knew were energetic players. I mean, even a guy, albeit a role player at best, but think about like Raheem Nunez-Roches, and they talked about how his attitude was infectious, but it didn't really like heed any sort of tangible results positively for this defense. And I think even in the best years of Bob Sutton's defense, when we saw the Chiefs finishing in the top 10 in scoring defense for a few years in a row, I think most people would point to it and say, you know, Bob Sutton and Andy Reid arrived here and the Chiefs, wasn't it the Chiefs in 2012, the worst season of Chiefs history, had like 8 Pro Bowlers? There's some weird number because they had a lot of really talented guys. And there wasn't any question about their ability to go out and perform, but they weren't being coached very well. And I know that at least for a time, it seemed like Bob Sutton was doing some good things. We called him Heisen Bob there for a while, you know, and for whatever reason, you end up seeing some of these tweets and they're talking about him just being completely unwilling to make any adjustments in game or in season. It seems like a pretty damning profile that people are kind of painting of Bob Sutton now in the aftermath. Is that how you would have characterized him too? And maybe at least over the last couple of years as a guy that just didn't seem to make any changes schematically or in game or in season?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're looking at this point, I mean, here's the problem. The exact same problems that existed in that 2015 playoff loss to the Patriots, they all just repeated themselves in the 2018 playoff loss to the Patriots. It's just, it's here's third down. Okay, we need to stop Tom Brady. He wants to throw the ball to Julian Edelman. You have to stop that. And he could not stop it. And the Patriots were running the exact same play over and over. Edelman's lined up outside. He motions into a stack, so you can't jam him off the line. And then he just runs like a little slant or a post over the middle, and he did it over and over and over again. And it's just, it was so obvious that the Chiefs were going to be in this man coverage with two safeties that were way too deep for where Tom Brady was throwing the ball. And they knew that. They knew that on every single third down, that's the kind of coverage that they're going to, that was the look. And they knew exactly how to beat it. And they just did it over and over and over again. And I think when the Chiefs finally did something to change that, and this is something we'll get into, I'm sure, but just Gronkowski beats Barry in one-on-one situations, I think that was maybe when they did make adjustments, like that was like the next wrinkle. And that was just depressing as all hell to see just Gronkowski, who's as beaten down as a player can be at this point, beating who should be our white knight, our saving grace, who we were all excited to have back in the game. But we'll get into him at a later point. Let's stick him with Bob Sutton right now. He was my 2014 season MVP just because of what he rectified with that defense that year. I think that was we lost Derek Johnson and Eric Berry right away that season. I can't remember quite who else, but just I really thought he just kind of changed his scheme from an ultra-aggressive 2013 defense, which was really good, to a bend-but-don't-break style in 2014. And I thought that really served the team well and got the most out of that team. Unfortunately, as the years went by, he was just too easy to figure out. Too easy to figure out for the top teams, which is where we're at this point. I mean, we have to get by the Patriots at some point. And whether that's because either Brady or Belichick finally retires, or because we have to actually come up with something different to beat them. Because they beat our ass up and down that field all night. It was an ass-kicking on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at some of the numbers that come out of the AFC Championship game, it's obviously frustrating to see that, you know, the Patriots go 13 of 19 on third down. And to me, I think the biggest thing, like my immediate takeaway, I tried to talk to Danny Parkins on his national TV show or national radio show rather, sorry. And I couldn't seem to get in over there, but I talked to Josh Briscoe a little bit on the 8:10 post game. And I pretty much just said, look, man, like the Patriots ran 94 offensive plays And I don't remember a single time that the Chiefs really challenged them. Like, that they made them do something other than what they wanted to do. I thought that the game plan from Bob Sutton was really vanilla, and it was as if lining up in man coverage. And I thought that they were in zone on third down on a lot of those conversions. It really looked like, but whether they were in zone or whether they were in man, Tom Brady was just staring down his receiver. He wasn't looking off. He wasn't doing anything to trick anybody. They were just beating us. And it was like Bob Sutton thought that he could just line up as if we were better than Tom Brady and the Patriots. And even as I was talking about, as we led up to the Patriots game, that I didn't think that the Patriots were that dangerous offensively, that was me also thinking that Bob Sutton might, line up Kendall Fuller on Julian Edelman, which he didn't seem to do the entire night. We had Charvarius Ward, an undrafted free agent, going against a guy that has done this over and over and over again, and Julian Edelman and Tom Brady. Like, I did not understand really any of the decisions that Bob Sutton made in the AFC Championship game. And my immediate reaction, I think, when the game was over, was maybe this was the perfect scenario for the Chiefs this season. Aside from because they kept Bob Sutton, like, if they hadn't gotten rid of him, which they chose not to, getting all the way to the AFC Championship game, overtime of the AFC Championship game, and having it be blatantly obvious that the reason they lost was because of Bob Sutton, led me to believe that they were going to be able to fire him despite how successful the team overall was this year. And honestly, them stepping out on Tuesday afternoon and saying Bob Sutton is going to be relieved of his duties, and we didn't have to go through, are they going to, have him retire, or all the different things that people were worried about. Like, I was honestly shocked. My tweet was, I'd never believed that they would do it. Were you surprised at all that they ended up firing him?
No, I thought he was gone for sure. I think you kind of need someone to put this season on a little bit. They just really, it seemed like time. It just seemed too obvious. I do think the Romo stuff like contributed a little bit, but I think it was just kind of something. I mean, I thought they would have last year. I was kind of surprised that they didn't. And maybe one of the reasons they did is because, well, I guess it wasn't as late in the season last year. I was thinking maybe they wouldn't have got their names of choice because they're in the playoffs, which kind of sucks, because right now it seems like most of the names that people would have wanted, the names that would have made sense coming from Andy Reid's tree, are kind of gone now just because they lost so late in the season. But, I mean, I don't share that sentiment with Bob that this is like some sort of good thing, because what we needed from Bob, it was to beat – the Patriots. We needed to beat a top tier team. And so if we win the game, then he would have accomplished his goal. And maybe that's just making it too black and white with a loss. But I mean, that's where I'm at right now, is I don't think with Bob Sutton, we could ever beat the Patriots in the playoffs. Like, I don't think we could ever slow down their offense, just because their coaches are just three steps ahead of Bob Sutton at all times. We would have to score 35 points to beat the Patriots in a playoff game, just because they just kick his ass. I don't know exactly what happened. I saw Fuller on Edelman a couple of times, but they were doing that motion thing from the outside, so he was kind of with Charvarius. They were working on our miscommunication problems that occurred over and over. And I never would have had confidence with Bob Sutton in a big time game against top coaches ever really again. And I think his scheme does work against the lessers of the league. So I think you see a lot of long term success. I think it works if he has the talent, which he did in the first 3 years or so. But overall, just the total package of Bob Sutton, it was just enough. And it was time for him to go. It didn't surprise me. And that's it. See you, Bob. Okay.
So, we mentioned, or I guess you started out by saying that you were not excited about any of the candidates so far. And really the only two names that I've seen are Rex Ryan and Steve Spagnuolo. Now, like, Chiefs fans have floated out other names, and some of the the people that cover the team are floating out their own private, or I say private, but like personal lists of guys that they would like. And you mentioned, you know, candidates are off the board now. And I think that the two main guys that are off the board are Todd Bowles and Steve Wilks, guys that were head coaches this past season and were recently fired. Todd Bowles ultimately landing on Bruce Arians' staff in Tampa Bay, and then Steve Wilks going from the head coach in Arizona to now the defensive coordinator in Cleveland. Generally speaking, I think that the problem that I have so far with Rex Ryan and Steve Spagnuolo, number one, I really don't think that either of them right now entering the 2019 season should be considered prime defensive coordinator candidates. And one of the first tweets that we saw from a member of the media was talking about how the Chiefs had interviewed players and coaches and their frustration about Bob Sutton's lack of adjustments was really grating on people, and that a prime job was now open. If this job is a prime job, if this is considered a prime job in the NFL, then the Chiefs should be able to hand pick whoever it is that they want. And frankly, right now, I don't think that there's really much, if any, competition. There aren't a lot of other defensive coordinator jobs, if any. I didn't do the research on this, but like most of the staffs have been filled out at this point. And so I don't see how Rex Ryan or Steve Spagnuolo could be emerging as a top candidate for a prime job in the NFL in 2019. That, to me, honestly, is really disappointing in terms of whether it's Brett Veach or Andy Reid or them collectively. And I think that what it points to me, is that, you know, you mentioned with Rex Ryan that he's the type of guy that you can hand the defense over to. And we've talked about throughout this season how impressed we were with Andy Reid, you know, sitting down with Patrick Mahomes on the sideline, like not even watching the defense, because he knew that it was about the offense. And I like the idea of being able to empower a defensive coordinator to have that kind of autonomy. And so maybe he's looking for guys that were former head coaches or have been longtime defensive coordinators. Maybe that's great. But, I mean, to me, if that's what you're looking for, if you're looking for a guy that has a lot of experience, the guy that's at the top of my list is Marvin Lewis. Marvin Lewis is the one that created the defensive philosophy in Baltimore. When the Colts moved to Baltimore and they became the Ravens, the very first defensive coordinator of that team was Marvin Lewis. He was their defensive coordinator when they had the greatest defense in arguably NFL history and won the Super Bowl. And Rex Ryan was actually the third defensive coordinator in Baltimore. The guy that came after Marvin Lewis was Mike Nolan. Rex Ryan was on Marvin Lewis's staff in Baltimore. And Marvin Lewis, well, all the jokes that you can make about the Brown family or just how mediocre Cincinnati has been, or Marvin Lewis has maybe been as a head coach, Marvin Lewis is an unbelievable defensive mind and a truly respected leader of men. And I think that bringing him in as defensive coordinator, I would take him over Spagnuolo and Rex Ryan like every single time. And I don't feel like his name has been bandied about that much in the local media or among fans. And I think that's pretty depressing, honestly.
Yeah, no, I kind of like that move. I do like the idea. I'm a little bit worried, like the name Chris Richard gets thrown out a lot. And, you know, one problem with like a hot prospect, young prospect like that, if he accomplishes anything, and, you know, there's a good chance that he would, as on a team that's going to be successful like the Chiefs, like he's going to be jumping at the head coaching opportunity like in the next couple of years. So, I mean, you might only be looking for like a year or two out of like this hot young candidate. And, you know, that if he does accomplish great things, I mean, that leads to big time success. So, I mean, Chiefs fans obviously wouldn't be too mad about that. But, you know, I kind of want somebody who's old, who's been a head coach, who's kind of established, who's just kind of like, let me take over this defense for the next 5 years and you know, run this unit. Marvin Lewis kind of fits into that. Another name that I've heard that I would be in favor of is Jack Del Rio. And this isn't a name that I've heard, you know, attached to the Chiefs or anything like that, just mentioned casually. But Jack Del Rio kind of fits that mold too. Just a former head coach, knows what it takes, defensive guy, middle linebacker. So he can, you know, you would assume that was his specialty, so he can help in that area. I think that's where we need most help from a coaching standpoint. And I feel like Marvin Lewis kind of applies to that too, even though I guess maybe the Ravens were just Ray Lewis is, you know, one of the best players of all time. So maybe that's why I'm thinking that. But just a guy like that. I just, none of the names that are really getting floated are really do too much. Like, it just, like, I'm looking at this list. Nick Jacobs had a list of 10 guys. And, you know, this Chris Richard guy, even him, who, you know, has a great resume and would be interesting. The Cowboys aren't supposed to let him go, and apparently they don't even have to let him interview because it's not seen as a promotion or whatever. I don't really understand all this. I was told assistant to assistant coach job, even if it's up to a coordinator, is not seen as a promotion. So it's up to the team whether they want you to approve that interview. Like, the Cowboys could deny our interview request for Chris Richard. So I don't know. It's all confusing to me. But then, you know, these other names listed, none of them really mean anything to me. I look at them and it's like Ravens secondary coach. Like, sure, that looks fine. Bears defensive line coach. Sure, that looks fine. I don't know. None of the names do too much for me, but I like the idea of getting an old timey, former head coach would be my choice.
So, and I think that I'm probably on the young up and comer bandwagon, just because I hope, and there's not a track record for any of them, because most of these guys haven't been defensive coordinators for, but my hope is that they want to come in and innovate. And when I think about a lot of these older coaches, they have a system, they have a scheme, and they believe in it, and they want to come in and implement that. And the reason that Andy Reid is so well respected and so unique is because he's constantly trying to innovate the things that he knows works. And he's willing, seemingly, to take from anything, anywhere, high school, college, it doesn't matter what division or what level. And he's implementing these concepts into the offense that are helping the Chiefs to stay ahead of the curve. And I just don't know that one of these old defensive retreads is going to be willing or able to do that. I'll tell you, at least as far as Jack Del Rio is concerned, I've heard that he is kind of the leading candidate to take over as defensive coordinator on the staff that's going to be assembled in Cincinnati. Cincinnati and Miami are the two jobs I know haven't been filled yet because they don't have their head coaches yet. And that's because you have the guy, I think it's Zach Taylor, that's taking over Cincinnati as the Rams quarterbacks coach. And then
come on, put some respect on the former Nebraska's great quarterback's name. Put some respect on it.
And then Brian Flores, who's going to be taking over the Dolphins job, is coaching for New England still. So they can't really assemble their staffs, even if they've done so maybe behind closed doors. I'd say another guy, and like maybe people will balk at this, but another guy that I haven't looked at the numbers, but I would consider before Steve Spagnuolo, who Schefter reported is currently like the leader in the clubhouse for this job, is John Fox. I mean, John Fox has taken multiple teams to a Super Bowl as a head coach. He's definitely a defensive-minded guy. I don't really know what his resume is, but in terms of being able to hand something to a guy that's a veteran coach, that's a guy that I don't think I'd be that upset about. But I think that, honestly, you mentioned Chris Richard. This is a guy, to me, that if you can get him, he is a prime candidate. And if this is considered like an elite-level job, that guy is – a tremendous fit for what you want on your defense. He does all the things that I think anyone in the NFL likes. They talk about how aggressive those Seahawks defenses were and how they relied on speed and athleticism and dictating what offenses were going to try to do. Like, no, we dictate the pace and we dictate the amount of aggression that's going to happen on the field. Like, that's the calling card of this guy. And I don't know how all that stuff works. I would assume that currently being the secondary coach for the Dallas Cowboys and then being a defensive coordinator, that should be considered a promotion. And if it's not, I mean, Andy Reid's not going to hand him the assistant head coach title, I wouldn't think. The problem that you mentioned is that if you get a guy like that, that comes in and he does a good job and he was already interviewing for head coaching jobs this offseason, that maybe you only get him for a year. Maybe you only get him for 2 years. And then you feel like you're kind of playing whack-a-mole a little bit because you're losing these guys. And that's happening on the offensive side of the ball, but Andy Reid is there. And so it doesn't matter. And so it's less of a problem, you know, if you're losing guys like Doug Peterson or Matt Nagy or Bieniemy or Kafka eventually, because Andy Reid is still there.
It's almost like replacing the head coach just because he has so much responsibility being in charge of, you know, one side of the ball, overseeing everything that's going on. You know, to have to replace that 1 or 2 years later, it's asking for a lot. But Richard's resume is fantastic. You are very outspoken about Steve Spagnuolo. Let's get into him a little bit. It's weird to see like his resume, because, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind obviously is the 2007 Giants. He was in charge of the defense that took down the 2007 Patriots. So a huge notch on his belt there. But then since then, I've never seen somebody who's more up and down. It seems like he either has a top five defense in the league or a bottom five defense in the league. And since the Giants, it's been more bottom five than top five. So it's really, I mean, he spent 1 year with the Saints, even though it was the weird Bounty Gate year. So that was kind of I don't know if you want to throw that away, but they were terrible. One of the worst defenses of all time.
I think they gave him 900 more yards defensively than any other team in the league that season.
It was the most all time at the time. I think the Chiefs might have broken it this year. I'm not even sure, but yeah. Even with, you know, just not even long term speaking, just short term, Steve Spagnuolo with the Giants for the last 3 years, his defenses have gone 30th and then 2nd and then 30th. I mean, so that's and the second year they bring in those free agents, but a lot of those free agents are still around the next year when they finish 30th. It's just like, it's like either everyone buys in and they have this fantastic defense, or that completely falls apart. I mean, not too unlike Bob Sutton, but you are very outspoken against Steve Spagnuolo, and this isn't something new. Because I think we've argued about this before. But what's your biggest problem with old Spags?
So the biggest thing for me is that I feel like Spagnuolo is kind of a carbon copy of Bob Sutton. In that the results are top of the league and bottom of the league. And from year to year, it's hard to know what you're going to get from him. And it seems like his success is predicated upon talent. You know, their ability to shut down the Patriots in 2007 was because they had arguably the greatest defensive end of all time in Michael Strahan, playing arguably the best season of all time that year. And then he also had OCU Manyora, Jason Pierre-Paul, Matthias Kiwanuka, and it was just this relentless pressure that they had up front. Now, what I'll say is that if Steve Spagnuolo is named the defensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs and the Chiefs decide to bring back Dee Ford and Justin Houston to go along with Chris Jones, and maybe – I don't know how to count these guys, but Breland Speaks and Tano Passanio, then you're talking about five guys that were all drafted in the first two rounds of the NFL draft that at least at some point have shown you that they have ability to get after the quarterback. And whether for guys like Passanio and Speaks that was more about the college level, again, five guys all drafted in probably like the top 60 picks of the NFL draft. Like, that's the kind of talent that can make Spagnuolo's system work, at least as far as generating pressure up front is concerned.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's what I was kind of thinking. Like, the success that he did have with the Giants almost kind of reminds me of the defense the Chiefs have now. So that's a bit of a positive sign, I guess I would say.
It's that, but I mean, so like Bill Barnwell tweets out some stats today, and he says, Spagnuolo's defense wins a Super Bowl with the Giants in 2007. His team's DVOA on defense since leaving to take the Rams head coaching job in 2009, 31st, 19th, 21st, 32nd, 30th, 2nd overall in 2016, and then 24th. I mean, he has one good year, and the rest of these are really bad. And he says, you know, for reference, if you want to look at Bob Sutton's defensive DVOA with the Chiefs, it's 9th, 19th, 6th, 14th, and then 30th and 26th each of the last 2 years. I mean, look, to me, the biggest thing I think with Spagnuolo is that when you go through and you look at the 2016 team when they ended up second in DVOA, that offseason – they signed Olivier Vernon, Damon Harrison, and Janoris Jenkins, and that ended up being the season that Landon Collins broke out and became a good football player. And that's added to some of the other talent that they already had with Jason Pierre-Paul playing opposite him. And then they also had another corner, and I can't remember who it was. But generally speaking, like you're talking about a really talented defense, and everybody was looking at it saying, like, the Giants went out and spent in order to make this defense good. And as soon as the talent starts to wane even a little bit, then the defense ends up falling off a cliff. And to me, it's like maybe that's what you're looking at the upcoming season, is that the Chiefs have a bunch of young talent that is maybe going to be able to make an impact with the whole draft that they just had. If they don't really let anybody walk that's of importance to the defense this offseason, you know, maybe just Alan Bailey or something – and they spend and they draft on defense, then suddenly Spagnuolo is going to have this huge cabinet of talent to work with. And almost always in the first year of a new defensive coordinator, you're going to see improvement. But if we're talking about trying to create something that lasts, like you said, having a defensive coordinator for the next 5 years, I think that what you're going to see with a guy like Spagnuolo is that it peaks in year one, and that the next 4 years after that, we end up taking all this time complaining about how he's no different from Bob Sutton and the team is not adjusting and that they're not good. I think it's going to be a problem. Now, that's just projection. It's just guesswork. I mean, I could be completely wrong on that. But to me, like, I want to see a guy that comes in and feels like he has something to prove. And I don't know if Chris Richard is the right guy for that. And I don't think that, honestly, most of these old guys, most of these guys that have been head coaches, are going to have that attitude either. One of the biggest names for me, the guy that I think that really stands above the rest as a potential option, is Mike Zimmer's son, Adam. So when Adam first started coaching Minnesota's linebackers 5 years ago, they were completely bereft of talent. And since then, Minnesota's defense has blossomed into one of the best in the league. And he's taken guys like Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr, who were big-time question marks coming out of the draft. Maybe they had talent, but they had no idea how they were going to fit. And both of them have become exceptional players in the NFL. And I look at it and say he's 34 years old. He's got a great pedigree from his dad, but he's also proven that he knows what he's doing coaching linebackers. And this guy needs an opportunity to coach a defense. I love that as a potential fit personally.
Yeah. And there's kind of the connection. Zimmer was under Andy Reid. He's in his tree, correct?
I believe so, but I mean, I know at the very least he was under Marvin Lewis. I'm not sure. Zimmer's such an old guy. He's one of those guys that didn't get a shot to coach, you know, until he was in his 60s. I think Mike Zimmer's pretty old. He's up there.
The Andy Reid coaching tree is so big, we can't even keep track of all the branches at this point.
Right.
I mean, I'm down with that. I mean, but again, you look at it and you say Anthony Barr is a first-round pick and Eric Kendricks was a first-round pick, maybe a second-round pick.
But like in the top 40 or something.
I mean, it's just there's the talent. I mean, it's just the talent versus coaching argument at all times, it seems like. I wonder, I mean, it's just defensive play in the NFL across the board is so down. Maybe that's why there just doesn't seem that there's that many good candidates anymore. It's, I mean, it's like the good defenses in the NFL, you're looking at the Bears and the Ravens, and that's the list. So, I mean, you're poaching someone from their staffs, or you're taking someone who from a defense that didn't really do that great. I mean, I guess Dallas Cowboys had a good defense this year, but anyone other than those three have a good defense that you really want to poach anybody from? And then the names on those staffs are mostly just kind of unknown, and the names that connected to Andy Reid that would have, you know, moved the needle for me, they've already been scooped up. It's just not a great pool of candidates to me, but it'll be interesting to see where they go.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess for me, when I think about trying to fill out a staff, I mean, I go back to initially Andy Reid taking the job about 6 years ago and me trying to find the guy that I think Andy should hire to run the defense. And for the most part, what I was doing was looking at position groups in the NFL or defenses in the NFL that had performed well and trying to poach somebody that hadn't been a defensive coordinator before. Some of you may be, you know, friends with me or following me for this length of time. Dirk, I don't know if you remember this, but the initial guy that I was really hoping that the Chiefs would hire as their defensive coordinator was Sean McDermott, who's now the head coach in Buffalo. He's a guy that right before Andy got fired, became the defensive coordinator in Philly, and it just didn't work out. I think he was the person that they ended up hiring after Andy ended up having to get rid of the former offensive line coach who replaced Jim Johnson. Sean McDermott, to me, was a really up-and-coming guy because he had coached an elite secondary in both Philly and Carolina. And I look at it, and that's how I am evaluating any potential candidate, like I mentioned with Zimmer. You know, it's not just the fact that he's got a group of players that have played really well. It's also, at least with him, that, you know, you're talking about his dad as one of the great defensive minds in the NFL, and he hasn't gotten a shot yet. I mean, one of the things I think that stands out, too, when you look at Chris Richard as a possibility – is that when I think about Seattle's defense, and granted, he took over them in 2015, so he didn't necessarily develop this talent, but he was the defensive backs coach prior to that, and he is an assistant of Pete Carroll's dating all the way back to the days of USC. You look at some of the guys that they hit on in the draft that ultimately rounded out that incredible defense in Seattle, and you're talking about Richard Sherman being a fifth-round pick. And you're talking about some of the other guys in the secondary. Earl Thomas was a first rounder, but Cam Chancellor is a late round guy. And all of the corners, Brandon Browner and whomever else that were always playing across from Sherman, all of those are late round picks. Bobby Wagner was a second round guy, but KJ Wright was taken in the fourth or fifth round. And so I feel like they were able to not only identify talent, but then ultimately put them into a system and develop guys, and they played together and became one of the greatest units in the NFL. And frankly, they should have won two Super Bowls. And I look at that, and like, that's where I just want to see somebody that feels like they've got something to prove. And I don't think that any of these old guys are going to be in that position. I mean, yeah, maybe one more minute in the sun, and they want to see if they can get a head coaching job again. I don't know, but like, most of the guys that we're talking about, whether it's Steve Spagnuolo or Rex Ryan or, you know, John Fox, or, I mean, you look at even a guy like Leslie Frazier, who I think
I actually had him pulled up on my phone and saw that he's the current Bills defensive coordinator.
And the Bills on defense this year without being able to name like a single guy on that team.
Exactly. And he was under your guy that you were talking about, Dave McDermott, whatever.
Sean McDermott.
Not the Creighton basketball player, no. But I do agree that it's just like, it is a prime job. It's, your expectations aren't super high. You got to get them to league average. You're going to be in the playoffs. Like, there is every reason for defensive guys to want to come to this job.
So, I guess to try to exit this particular conversation about the defensive coordinator, is there like one guy? I mean, would you feel confident saying that you do want a guy that had head coaching experience and a guy that, you know, you can just kind of hand the reins over to and not have to think about at all? Is that really what you're looking for?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I have done next to no research on this whatsoever. We've already talked about this long enough that extends my knowledge, really. But I mean, Jack Del Rio makes a lot of sense to me. Someone in that realm, Rex Ryan, it does excite me. I'll say that just because he's got so much bravado. Like, I would just feel like that would hopefully just rub off on the defense, and they'd get like a new swagger to him, which I think is something that they desperately need at this point. They've just been listening to boring old Bob for 5 years and just kind of lollygag out there a lot. So I would want someone like that, but no one name sticks out, but it's one of those guys. It's a big hire, though. I'll say that. It's huge. Huge.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I would say that, like, in terms of bringing an attitude and bringing something that I think is completely different from what you've had with Bob Sutton, Rex Ryan is a great option. I'm not thrilled about the idea of Rex Ryan. I think that he's like a little bit too, this sounds weird, but like he's a little too quirky for me. I think that I've got a lot of questions about his intentions of even like taking a defensive coordinator job. I think that there may be a lot of things where like he would like it because he doesn't think that Andy's going to, you know, have much to say to him and like that he needs that. And that to me, I don't know that I like the fit with him and Andy Reid personally. I will say, though, that the idea, like the positives about Rex Ryan, I don't know if they outweigh the negatives or not. But there's a lot to like about having a guy that's going to come in and, as they say, like be a red ass and just be somebody that's going to ignite, I think, a lot of guys and frankly, a lot of young guys on that defense, too. That like they need some inspiration and they need some fire and passion. And I think that maybe if they were able to take on the attitude that Rex Ryan would bring to the table, that could be a really good thing.
And how about this? He beat the Patriots in Foxborough in a playoff game with Mark Sanchez as his quarterback. So yeah. He's done what we haven't been able to do.
Yeah. I will say that I think if we're just trying to round out the conversation, you know, Dirk is kind of hoping for an experienced guy. And I think that I'm kind of on the opposite end where I would prefer to have a young guy that feels like he's got something to prove. I want to transition away from the defensive coordinator and maybe talk about the personnel a little bit because, man, I read an article that Jeff Schwartz wrote for SB Nation. And he was talking about how the Chiefs are going to be back. And one of the things that I think is kind of a huge afterthought of this article is that he says he thinks the Chiefs are going to move on from Eric Berry. He literally just wrote a sentence saying, I think the Chiefs are going to move on from Eric Berry, so safety should be a big priority this offseason. And, like, that's it. It was just, like, this one little dump at the end of a paragraph. And I'm like, wait, what? And I don't know if this is him maybe not looking at the numbers or having any sort of knowledge. I think that people kind of bloat the things that maybe former players say as if it's some sort of gospel. And certainly when he has a brother on the team that maybe they think he's got some inside information, as if Mitch Schwartz knows whether the team is going to move on from Eric Berry or not. But I did hear that Josh Briscoe was saying that he went and looked at over the cap and suddenly the numbers on Eric Berry's contract look a lot more digestible if the Chiefs were to designate him as a post June 1st cut this offseason. I know that people have kind of talked about a little bit the potential of doing like an injury settlement with Eric Berry. I don't think he had any impact on any game this season outside of like the 30 snaps or so that he played against the Chargers. And I don't really know what to expect from this guy, but you're talking about a player that is making in excess of $15 million a season and in many ways is supposed to be the centerpiece of your defense. And I think that as you bring in a new defensive coordinator, the personnel is going to be one, like that guy, whoever they bring in, they've got a big job ahead of them. And even if we want to say that the offense is going to take a lot of pressure off of them, I think that it's a huge offseason for this team on decisions that that defensive coordinator is going to have to make in cooperation with a guy like Brett Veach. Is Dee Ford somebody that you want to work with in this system? Is Justin Houston? Is Eric Berry? Do we need to, you know, replace Steven Nelson and Charvarius Ward? Like, do we need two starting corners? There's a lot there that I think the defensive coordinator is going to have a lot of say in. And, Girk, I guess I'm just interested in your thoughts on particularly Eric Berry and Justin Houston, two guys that the Chiefs would either have as the faces of their defense or be moving on from and have a completely different look.
Eric Berry's in the conversation for worst contracts in NFL history. He was dreadful in the playoff game. I don't really want to talk about him. Justin Houston, I don't know. I'm pretty much done with him. I don't. Look, the 2019 Chiefs are coming. They aren't here yet. I ain't ready for it.
Okay.
I ain't ready for it.
All right. So Hibernation Dirk is not ready to become off-season Dirk. Let me ask you this. Some stuff on the game real quick. Did you know that the Chiefs scored 31 points on 32 plays in the second half?
I didn't know the number of plays, but I did. Yes, they scored a lot of points, and I mean most of those were in the fourth quarter. How about Damian Williams scoring three touchdowns in the fourth quarter of an AFC Championship? That's a hell of an accomplishment there. And also, yeah, don't forget to mention Mahomes apparently saying he's going to go out and put 30 points on the board in the second half, and then doing it. That's kind of the stuff of legend. I mean, we haven't really talked about him at all, but what Patrick Mahomes did on Sunday, I thought was really important to see and for it to have happened, because you never know how someone's going to react in those situations. I mean, Peyton Manning was if Peyton Manning were more clutch, he might be the best quarterback in NFL history, but he just kind of had a series of not playing up to his standards in playoff games. And you never would have guessed that watching him, because in games, he's always clutch. I mean, at fourth quarter comebacks, he was always great in those. But when it came time to playoff games, I think he overthought himself and didn't really show up, at least through the beginning portions of his career. And it kind of fed upon itself. It kind of snowballed into, okay, you're not winning in these playoff games. You're not getting it done. And that kind of, you know, breeded upon itself. So for Mahomes to go out there, and I mean, I haven't watched a lot of the first three quarters. I did happen to see a lot of the fourth quarter. I rewatched some of that. So I'm sure he missed a lot of throws. I remember the miss to Damian Williams early on. I'm sure he made a lot of mistakes in the early going of the game. But for him to lead those drives at the end of the game, it was unbelievable. And for him to lead, especially that final drive, I mean, with 30 seconds needing to go, you know, 40 or 50 yards, it's just you're hoping for magic at that point, and he produced the magic. So just another bar that Patrick Mahomes cleared. I caught PTI on Monday. I watched it today, actually. And Tony Kornheiser kind of comes in and he goes, "That's the last anybody's beating Patrick Mahomes. He's got the goods." And that was his statement. He's got the goods. And I thought that was just, it was well said. And Patrick Mahomes is here. And for him to play that well, at least at the end of a game that was that big, was amazing to watch.
Yeah. And it's like, as much as I feel like we can revisit a lot of different mistakes that were made during that game, particularly mistakes that were made by the offense too, because I think the defense was just like, it was so egregious the entire time. With the offense, it's having to maybe put a microscope over a few different instances. But I mean, you mentioned Damian Williams. Damian Williams, more targets in the passing game than Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill combined. Who saw that coming? You also end up looking at Sammy Watkins' performance, outperforming Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill combined. And then, you know, you talk about...
I don't want that to be like a slight of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. I mean, maybe it should be a little bit, but it's also clear that the game plan for the Patriots was to take those two away. I mean, people have said that there was a Tyreek Hill has essentially double covered the entire game. I'm sure Travis Kelce saw a lot of the same things. So the counter to that should be, hey, throw to our expensive receiver over here, Sammy Watkins, who should be, you know, facing single coverage at least. And I guess Stephon Gilmore eventually went over to Travis Kelce. So I'm not sure who exactly was on Sammy Watkins, but that should have been the counter to feed Damon Williams and Sammy Watkins.
I mean, I get that. I'm just looking at the fact that I was really frustrated with the way that Tyreek Hill was employed because, like, he has one catch in the game, and it's that 40-yarder that kind of got them started in the second half. Look, if he's being double covered, Andy Reid has shown an interest and ability to get Tyreek Hill involved regardless of what the defense is doing all season long. Where is the sideways motion that we're seeing throughout the entire season? Where is the end around? Where is anything? Just get the ball into Tyreek's hands because that guy shows that he can score a touchdown from anywhere on the field. And I just didn't think that, frankly, there was a whole lot of creativity there. Ultimately, I think that my major frustration with the offense, like, it sucks to go scoreless in the first half, especially with Mahomes missing Damian Williams. And it seemed like, for whatever reason, we've now realized that Chiefs quarterbacks just can't seem to hit running backs on, like, that pattern. It looked just like the overthrow of what's-his-face, the Texas
A&M Gray.
Cyrus Gray looked just like that overthrow, looked like another overthrow that Mahomes had of a running back, too. Just can't seem to land that particular pass. But I think that ultimately where my most frustration with the offense lied, a lot of it was time management and situational football. Stuff that, again, maybe I'm out of my depth here because this is stuff that I don't think I fully understand. But, man, you talked about how one of the things that you were worried about after the Chiefs parted ways with Kareem Hunt was their ability to run the four-minute drill. And when the Chiefs got the ball down three with about 3.5 minutes left and two of their three timeouts, they ended up scoring in like a minute and a half. They scored way faster than they needed to, and they weren't handing the ball off. They weren't really doing anything in that situation to try to milk the clock. And you end up having the one long gainer from Watkins, and then they're basically at like the, you know, the 5-yard line or something. And so you can't waste any more clock at that point. And then you give Tom Brady the ball with the ability to end the game. And fortunately, he didn't. The Patriots scored too fast, too. But it just, like, I just watched it. And, like, this is one where I don't know if I can criticize Andy Reid or if this is more criticism for Patrick Mahomes. But I think one thing that Pat needs to learn a little bit, he's so dangerous. And his ability to throw the ball down the field and run around and make plays and use his arm as such a weapon, it's second to none in the NFL. There's nobody that comes close to his ability to do that. And so I see why he does it. But I also think that this team and this offense would really benefit from, number one, Mahomes maybe being willing to tuck it and run the ball a little bit more, take 5, 6, 8, 10, 15 yards on a little scramble instead of trying to beat the defense by throwing it 40 yards downfield. I also think that, honestly, just running some shorter routes and giving Mahomes some options to be able to be throwing some shorter passes so that you can chew up the field a little more and you can chew up the clock a little more. I mean, this is talking about how to build a team that plays complementary football. And honestly, I don't know if there's a way to complement an offense that scores 31 points on 32 plays in a half of a football game. I don't know. It's almost like they're too explosive, or they're too good, or they score too fast, and you put the defense right back out there. I don't know. They have to figure something out there, and I don't know if it's Andy Reid or if it's Patrick Mahomes, but, I mean, it's a minor complaint that we're scoring too fast.
Well, I think that is something that will come with age with Patrick Mahomes. I mean, you have to think he's been playing in a Texas Tech offense in college. He was playing at a Texas high school, and I'm sure they were scoring at an alarming rate. So he's just kind of – that's how he's programmed to, you know, make giant plays and always be looking for the big play, that kind of thing. I think that's just how he is programmed as a player, which is fantastic. That's exactly what you want. I think with age, he will learn to take what's there a little bit more. And I think that will help him, because it'll especially help him if there's one flaw that we're kind of seeing with Patrick Mahomes at this point, is that he's wild with the ball early in games. And I guess you can call those big games if you want, but I think it spreads across a lot of games, and he just kind of comes out and he's a little bit inaccurate with the football early in games. So I think the way that you might help that is to kind of, you know, take more of what's there in the early going and try and get everybody involved and all this, like more professional style quarterback things, as opposed to what he's been doing throughout his entire career, both in high school and college. So I think that's something that will come in time. As far as the situational, I didn't have a huge problem with them. In that final drive, they're moving slow at first, and then they get the pass interference penalty against Sammy Watkins, which is a really horrible call, which is important for Chiefs to remember. There was calls that went against both teams, some bad calls. The one against Sammy, the pass interference was really silly. There's actually a roughing the passer on the same play, and I don't think they replayed that, so I couldn't tell on that one. And then I think the next play was the deep one to Sammy Watkins, where there was an obvious offensive pass interference on that one too that didn't get called. And then all of a sudden you're at the 2-yard line, and at that point, kind of like what you said, it's too late to control the clock at that point, because they were on the plus side of the 2-minute warning, and the Patriots had all three of their timeouts. So there just wasn't much you could do at that point. You could make the argument, I guess, that they should have been running there. They should have, you know, instead of the deep ball to Sammy Watkins or the big gain to Sammy Watkins, they should have run it there, you could say. I'm for that, but I wasn't too mad at anything in particular when it came to that. Not my biggest problem with the offense, was just the offensive line. I think this was kind of the story of the game, is that all season, you know, the Chiefs are the number one team in sacks, and they can't sniff Tom Brady all game. And that's something that should have gone in with the Bob Sutton criticisms. Like these two playoff games against Tom Brady and the Patriots, we're not even getting close to Tom Brady. What's happening here? We have a dominant pass rush, and maybe, I guess, there were some injuries in the 2015 game, at least you could point to. But in this game, we got our full complement and can't get to him. So that's not happening. And then the Patriots, it's almost like their biggest flaw as a team is their pass rush. And yet they are just harassing Mahomes all game long, and they're kind of doing it with these stunts that have long been a problem under Andy Reid and the Chiefs offense. Like, they just cannot seem to figure out stunts and stuff. And I'm not sure if that's the full story, because I haven't seen a lot of this. I've just seen kind of the numbers where, you know, Mahomes is under pressure 45% of his dropbacks, and Tom Brady's, you know, gets hit once or something. I think that's kind of that kind of summarizes the game to me. Like, this is a Patriots weakness, and yet they show up in the playoff game with it. And this is the Chiefs' strength, and yet it's nowhere to be seen in this playoff game.
Yeah, and I mean, so when you look at something like the way the Patriots were able to pressure Mahomes versus the inability for the Chiefs to pressure Tom Brady, some of it is based on the Patriots saying, like, we know that we don't have the talent, and so we're going to throw everything that we can. And you talk about, like, the twists and the stunts and all these different things. They're trying to bring pressure from every angle, and it's literally just like, let's throw anything at the wall and see what sticks. And you get the complete opposite of that from Bob Sutton, where it's like, we're going to do one thing over and over and over and hope that that bears out some results. And that's obviously frustrating. I mean, I think to me, where the Chiefs could really stand to improve offensively, you know, you mentioned that some of Mahomes, it might just come with age. And I agree with that. Here's the big thing that I think is the difference. And don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, Mahomes is almost 20 years younger than Tom Brady. The biggest difference between the two of them is, I think, about command of the game, not command of the offense, not command of the huddle, but like truly owning the game. Because Mahomes does these incredible things, but a lot of it, I think, even if he looks masterful doing some of the things that he does with his arm slots and everything else, it looks wild. It looks like things that, like, we've never seen it before, and he's just doing stuff and he's pulling it out of his ass, and it's amazing. But, like, it doesn't seem like he really has control or command of what's happening in the game. It's so erratic. And so much of that, I mean, he's a first-year player. Like, these are really minor concerns. But you know that he has to get better. You know that you want the team to get better, and you want to see some improvements. And so when I look at Mahomes, I think that maybe one of the biggest things is having command of the game. And some of that is going to just bring about, like, some awareness about what he should do in different situations. And hopefully – and I know that maybe the AFC Championship game is a poor example, but, like, you mentioned the Texas Tech thing. I hope that Mahomes can get to a place where he's a little bit more comfortable and it doesn't feel like it's always so urgent. You know, you talk about because he had to score so much in high school, because he had to score so much at Texas Tech, and frankly, with this defense, he had to score so much. Like, I want him to be able to calm down and get comfortable and chew up the field and chew up the clock. And some of that is just maybe having a little bit more confidence and not having that sense of urgency that, like, I have to go put up 50 today.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, it kind of brings us back to, like, the preseason podcast we were doing, and we're kind of just discussing the difference between Mahomes and Alex. And it was just like, I mean, obviously he's more talented and he's going to put up better stats and all this. But, you know, what's the worry is kind of like the management part of things. I don't think it's a huge problem, but I do get what you're saying, and it also makes me think of, like, an Aaron Rodgers compared to, like, a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning, and you feel like they're constantly in control of the game, and I think it leads to more success. And I'm not just talking Super Bowls here, because I know circumstances are very different, but I'm just talking about overall. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, they had one of the easiest schedules in the NFL this season and won 6 games. Like, that shouldn't be happening with a top-tier quarterback, and I feel like it's because he doesn't necessarily control the game like you're talking about. And whether you want to put all of that on Mike McCarthy or blah, 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 all this, he's just not in the same realm when it comes to controlling the game as a Tom Brady or Peyton Manning. And, you know, almost nobody is. And kind of drawing a Drew Brees here, and Drew Brees is kind of in the Rodgers realm, I think, a little bit. And they're just kind of built differently, and it's really hard to explain. But I do think there is something there, like just being in control of the game like that. And it's something that it does have to come over time. And you hope and assume that it will with Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the other things I think that stood out to me in the game that really frustrated me was Andy Reid's, I mean, seemingly he just goes back and decides he's going to trust Bob Sutton. I cannot believe that the Chiefs decided to punt from, like, the 35-yard line of the Patriots. Now, they say on the broadcast times that both of the kickers were struggling kicking into that end, and that, you know, beyond about, like, a 45-yarder or so, that it was pretty sketchy, but, like,
Hang on. To be clear, you're talking early in the game, like 4th and 23, after Mahomes takes that sack.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a tough situation, but the only option is kicking or punting. I remember discussing this in the stands. Like, I'm just not. You hate to punt there, but you can't go for it. You can't go for a 4th and 23. I mean, the thing you can't do, obviously, is take the 15-yard sack or whatever it was that Mahomes took. That's the first thing you can't do, but it's just, you're in a really tough spot once you get there. With you can't go for 4th and 23, so either you're kicking a 53, 54-yard field goal into the wind or whatever, like they said, and then giving the Patriots good field position, or punting. And it's a shitty spot, but I get what you're saying.
And then, I mean, the other one that really frustrated me, and I understood that, you know, it was like the second quarter, and we're at like our own 30-yard line, but it was like 4th down and less than 1, and Andy goes to punt, and it's just like, dude, Andy, we have got to get something going here. Why are you giving the ball back to the Patriots, who on their first drive chewed up like 9 minutes of the first quarter? Like, what is going on? And some of that, too, it's forgivable, but it's endlessly frustrating when I'm talking about, like, you can't trust this defense. You are an offensive football team. It's about your offense. And right now you're thinking, let's just see what Bob can do. Like, I just, it's frustrating to me.
It is frustrating, so much so that I'm trying to talk over you now, but yeah, it's the way we talked about the Chiefs losing all season, just like an offense playing possession style football like that and putting long drives together. And that was the first half to a T. And really, I mean, the Patriots did it to absolute perfection. And, I mean, if we want to be real honest, the Chiefs had almost no business being in that game. Tom Brady throws that horrific interception into the end zone. I couldn't believe he threw it. But, you know, if the Patriots play things better, like, their execution was fantastic. And I honestly don't really know how it was a game. I mean, looking at the box score, it's completely lopsided. Like, how the hell were we in that game? Like, they really took it to us. It was the way that they took it to us that we kind of feared all season, that teams would take it to us that way. And that's exactly how it happened. That's exactly how it went down. And it sucks that it's a Patriots team that we talked about them all season. Like, they just looked like shit. And you just take Julian Edelman, for example. And he looks like absolute dog shit all fucking season. And you can't believe, like, man, Julian Edelman is done. He's done. And then he's out here making every single big catch. Chris Hogan, just a fantasy disaster. And he comes up with a one-handed spike catch on a third down. It's just like, what the fuck? It's just showing up when it matters is a lot of it, a lot more than I think people want to say it is. And the Patriots, for whatever reason, I mean, it's not even the same fuck. It's not even all Tom Brady or whatever. I mean, you could, if D4 doesn't go off sides and Tom Brady throws that interception, all fingers point to him. I mean, he ends the game with 3 interceptions and that's how they lose the game. Instead, he goes off sides. You get Chris Hogan coming up with a one-handed catch. You get Gronkowski, who's been non-existent all season, coming up with 2 gigantic catches over our all-world $80 million safety. And it's, oh my God, I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they get everybody to show up time and time again, other than preparation, leadership, all that bullshit. I just don't, it's tough. It's tough to take, man. It's tough. It is tough.
Tough. Yeah, I mean,
I'm telling you, it's tough.
Is it tough, Dirk?
It's tough. I mean, tough.
It was really frustrating to see Gronk hit the over on catches and receptions when he hadn't done that probably in any game this whole season. And Edelman just like one after another after another. And you know, you mentioned Hogan too. I mean, I was picking out some of the tendencies that the Patriots were doing in the first half. And Tony Romo, you know, forecasting exactly what's going to happen on the broadcast. And I mean, I don't know if Romo was just like on fire or if it was like that easy, because I mean, I listened to a little bit of Simmons and Sal, and he basically said, like, this is just what we do. Like, they didn't do anything different. They really didn't draw anything up on offense. Like, the Patriots just played Patriots football, and
it's what they did in 2015, damn it. They just throw it to Edelman on third downs. They get him in these little man stuff. You cannot play man on Edelman in third down. It happens. It's the exact same. It's very frustrating. And then Gronkowski in one-on-ones, they're going to go to him in one-on-ones. Apparently, apparently still. I didn't think they still had that in their arsenal, but apparently they do.
Well, and you look at it, and honestly, like, clearly the Chiefs not scoring any points in the first half says that the Patriots were successful at frustrating Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. But, like, I think that the Chiefs ran, like, 13 plays in the first half or something.
It was, like, 8 minutes of time of possession.
Like, so it's interesting because you think about it, and it's like, when as an offense, like, how many drives do you need or how many plays do you need to run before you're like, okay, we need to change something because we haven't seen results from this, right? Like, at what point do you say that we need to make adjustments? And they're sitting at halftime and it's like, we've only had the ball like twice or three times, I guess, at this point. Like, what I heard from Mahomes after the game, they asked him about halftime adjustments and he's like, we didn't change anything. We were running the same plays and we just needed some time essentially to get into the game. Like, I don't think that there were a whole lot of adjustments really on either side of the ball. And to me, what that shows is that this offense, I mean, it's impressive enough that they scored 31 on like 47 plays, but to go 31 on 32 plays in a half of football, like, you can't stop the Chiefs from scoring. You really can't. You might be able to, like, in a short period of time, but, like, overall, over the course of four quarters, you can't stop them. You can't. They scored over 26 points at home in every single game this season, including multiple halves where they had zero. Like, they're just so unbelievably good on offense that, like, I don't even feel bad about what they did offensively.
Yeah, and I mean, they would have put up points if I believe the Damian Williams miss was in the first half. Is that correct?
It was. That was like leading up to halftime. They end up, he misses Damian Williams, and then he got
sacked.
And pushed them out of the field goal range, and they punt, and then the Patriots go down and score that touchdown right before halftime.
Which, yeah, so essentially the scheme worked for a touchdown there. I mean, it's a missed throw by Mahomes. I wanted to say, I heard Trent Dilfer, who I think is actually really good. He was on Colin Cowherd's show on Monday, and he was breaking down in like really great detail just like the time between when Mahomes is kind of running out of the tunnel and he's ready to go with the game, and like his arm is warming up like before the game, and you have to go into the locker room and then come back out, and then the Patriots have this super long drive. And he basically breaks this all down kind of minute by minute. And he's like, there's 40 to 45 minutes between when Mahomes' arm is loose and, you know, he's amped up for this game and ready to go. There's 45 minutes between that and when he's actually throwing his first pass. And so it's just kind of, I mean, I guess you could call them a rhythm offense. I mean, I think that's pretty fair to say after this game, seeing the rhythm they got in at the end and the lack of rhythm in the beginning of the game. And it's just something like that. That plays a part, and it's something that is a factor, and that's something that we don't really think about because it's not our bodies. You just see Mahomes run on the field and assume that he's ready to go. But, you know, it's just, and he was breaking it down like both physically and mentally, like it's both kind of play a factor here. And I thought that was, really interesting.
And here's another thing to think about just like strategically. I remember listening to Bill Simmons say that at the beginning of the Patriots-Chargers game in the divisional round, the Patriots win the toss, and Belichick, infamous as the Chiefs are, deferring to the second half, takes the ball. And they want the ball first, and the Patriots, you know, drive down the field and score, and they proceeded to do that four more times in the first half. But speaking to what you're talking about with Dilfer, on a game, you know, on a night when it's 20 degrees outside –
exactly.
And you don't want to have any opportunity for the opposing team to be able to drive down the field like that. And I think as Andy Reid should, you know, he wants to think that like at home that the Chiefs killed people in the first quarter, even with as bad as the defense has been. You know, they were outscoring opponents by some tremendous amount. The number of three and outs that they were able to get defensively, like it's that everything pointed to stick to your guns. But I mean, I can see it kind of solidifies that argument that you're hearing from Dilfer. Like, you, if Mahomes is in rhythm and he's warm, like, take the fucking ball. Take the ball. Go score some points.
Yeah, and that was something I thought about even leading up. I thought I kind of wondered, because both teams are very adamant that they're gonna win. If they win the toss, they are deferring. They always do that. So I kind of wondered leading up to this, just because I think getting early lead, especially in this game, was one of my keys to the game. I just kind of wondered about that, if either team or if either coach would do that, it'd be interesting to see what Belichick would say if he would have won the toss, if he would have kicked or received. But you know, even with that first quarter def or first quarter whatever you're talking about, I mean, remember the Chiefs won every single toss and they deferred every single time, so they were building those first quarter leads even with kicking off in, you know, at least the first half of the season when they were winning the coin tosses every single one of those games. So I don't know if it changes anything. You also get like the second half surge from the Chiefs. Like, if they don't have the ball first coming out of the second half, like, they go down and score in four plays and go 90 yards. Like, so that's the momentum starter for them. And that's, I mean, they build off that, and that's how they actually take the lead two different times in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, you see the benefits of receiving in the second half too, but that is interesting. Let's go back and play it again with the Chiefs getting the ball first. Let's go back out there and do it again.
Let me ask you this. I think that one of the conversations a lot of people have been having over the last few days, and I would imagine that this is kind of in Amateur Hour's wheelhouse, and our fans may want to hear what we have to say. You want to riff on the NFL overtime rules there, Dirk? And tell us how to do it the right way?
Honestly, I think the NFL overtime rules are pretty much perfect. I think it's drawn up perfectly. I mean, obviously, it sucks that Mahomes didn't get a chance. The only change that I could see, I mean, you're not going to a college style. It's just going to take forever. Like, it's just not possible. I could see changing it up in the playoffs and having it be a little bit different, because at that point, you're dealing with these, I mean, mostly elite offenses with the way the NFL is moving. Like, do you really want to stick with this? You have to rely on the defense kind of thing, but that is very far down on my list of complaints. I think the NFL overtime is structured perfectly. I did hear someone float the idea, like, if the other team scores a touchdown, you have to start on your own 10-yard line and go score a touchdown, which I thought was kind of interesting. But, I mean, how long does that game last if our defense is already out there for the most number of plays in any game since 2002, I think it was. How many plays does this game go if you're just trading off touchdowns? I mean, we saw it the entire fourth quarter. I mean, does it, both defenses just wear down more and more? Does it ever stop? I mean, are we still playing this game and it's 140 to 140 and we're kicking off again? I don't have a problem with the overtime rules. I think they're pretty perfect with the changes they made at, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, whatever they did.
So 38 points were scored in the fourth quarter, which just seems insane.
It was so much that it, like, all blurs together. Like, I was having trouble separating what happened when, just because there was, you know, you get three quarters, maybe three and a half quarters of just, like, nothing. And it's just kind of like slow football, and the Chiefs didn't show up. And then all of a sudden there's all these fireworks, and it's just all happening at the same time. And there's all these 50-50 calls that could go either way. And most of them went the Patriots' way correctly, I believe, for most of them. And it was really hard to unpack. Also, I need to say, with that number of play, man, I was exhausted at the end of the game. Just exhausted. Like, I had nothing left to give, and I was at the time, I was just like, man, I'm getting old. Like, I can't last an entire Chiefs game at this point. And then once I heard the stat that they had run 94 plays or whatever it was, the most plays since 2002, I kind of figured out, like, you just can't yell that many times in a row. Like, it's fucking freezing outside. You just can't do it. It was too much. And towards the end of the game, my head just is throbbing. I got some frostbite in my foot, if you want to know. My big toe on my left foot is actually, it's still numb. Which is both kind of scary and kind of a cool battle wound to have from the game. I hope that I do regain feeling in it, because it's the captain of the foot. The big toe is important. So I hope to regain full control of that toe. Otherwise, you know, I'll have to wear that with me for the rest. I lost a tooth from the divisional game, and I lost a toe from the championship game. But man, just the end of that game, just being so exhausted, so cold, so everything, and just trying to gut it out for my team. It was tough, and I don't even remember where we started this conversation, but back to you, Ryan.
A couple things just like inside the stadium for all the people that weren't there. I saw on the broadcast, they showed Clark Hunt banging the drum. He was fired up. He got really into it. I thought, honestly, it was a great look for an owner to be that into it, because I think that, honestly, most of the guys in the NFL, like, that's just not what you expect from them. I didn't even expect that from Clark Hunt, and he looked great banging that drum. I saw that Montana was there, and they had him, like, he was standing in one of the end zones and kind of trying to pump the crowd up. When was that? When did that happen? When was the Montana
thing? Dude, I was thinking back at that. I remember them introducing him at a really poor time. Like, it was when things were going really poorly, and it was just like, here's Joe Montana. It's like, who gives a flying fuck? How about we score some fucking points? I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was. I remember it being at a not a good time for Chiefs fans. Also, before the game, the defensive introductions, there was Justin Houston kind of like, he gets introduced and then kind of like waits off to the side for Eric Berry, and they kind of like ran in together. It was kind of weird. I don't remember exactly, but it was a really cool sign that had no impact on the game whatsoever.
Oh, so he's basically saying, if you're getting rid of one of us, you're getting rid of both of us.
Back into like, gladly. All we need is for, you know, Berry to retire. And Houston, we can just cut you. You don't have to retire or anything. You can keep playing, but we need Eric Berry to retire, sir.
Man, I just like, I don't, I sent out a tweet the other night where I was saying, like, I just don't see a desirable scenario when it comes down to paying $35 million for Justin Houston and Dee Ford in a single season. Or you know, over the course of however many seasons, but like per year, $35 million. And I could say the exact same thing, and it's probably more impactful to say it about Justin Houston and Eric Berry. Like, those guys combined is like $35 or $40 million. It's like a fifth of what you pay your entire roster. Like, I just don't. I'm over it. I'm over it.
Which, let me say, a little Chiefs 2019 glimpse here. I'm waking up a little bit. People are worried.
Feeling off-season-y.
People are worried about, once you have to pay Mahomes that much money, and I think over and over, you're paying Justin Houston and Eric Berry that much money right now and getting not much from them. I mean, obviously Houston is playing and he's solid. Berry, you're not getting anything from him, but you're paying him, you know, a top flight quarterback money between the two of them, especially between the two of them. I mean, that's $35 million. That's like prime Mahomes year, prime Mahomes salary going into that. So don't think that this window's over. You can't compete once they have to pay Mahomes that much money, because you're pretty much flushing that much money down the toilet right now, and you're competing at an AFC championship level.
Yeah, that's true. Any other things from inside the stadium that you feel like are imperative that people hear?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it was good to be there. It's a game you kind of always look back on. The fourth quarter was very epic. I think it's a game that will hopefully go down in lore. Like, they'll be kind of talked about. Like, I mean, if Mahomes goes on and has the Hall of Fame career that we're all kind of thinking, I think that's the kind of a game that you point to, like Brady's last hurrah. Hopefully, Jesus, fuck, retire, my God. And then the coming of Mahomes, it's kind of like just a, maybe the torch wasn't passed, but it was like kind of a last stand by Brady kind of thing. And so it's just a game that hopefully goes down in NFL history. It'll be cool to be like, maybe I don't have kids, but maybe I can tell my dog about it in like 10 years from now. I could be like, remember when I was at that game, dog? And it'd be like, woof.
I heard a pretty cool little anecdote, and I have no idea who's told it, so I'm just going to say that it's my own anecdote. I didn't hear it. You guys are about to, and it's coming from me. When you think about some of the great minds in coaching, and really like any sport, you're talking about guys like Phil Jackson and Greg Popovich. You know, you're talking about John Wooden and Vince Lombardi and Bill Belichick and Andy Reid. A lot of these guys, they emphasize both publicly and privately the importance of, like, the grief that comes in losing, sitting with it, not ignoring it, but taking it in, and you have to feel this. And that's one of the things that Mahomes said after the game. He's like, this one hurts a lot, and you got to sit with it. You got to feel this for a while. And I think
that she's speaking through Andy there, pretty much. You have to assume, like, that's the message that Andy drilled into him, and Mahomes kind of repeated it, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's probably exactly what Andy said to them in the locker room. And Mahomes went out and then ended up saying that to the media. And what that does to a team, and I think to the great players out there, you know, we talked last week, use that story from Therese, how he said this is either going to be, you know, the coming out party that really propels a guy like LeBron James into being the king, or it's a learning thing. It's something that's going to sit with him for a while and motivate him to be like Michael Jordan and ultimately win 6 championships. And I think that you mentioned this game going down in lore, in terms of, you know, Mahomes potentially having a Hall of Fame career. I think Mahomes is programmed the right way to be able to take a heartbreaking loss like this and the feeling of having to sit on the sideline throughout overtime and watch Tom Brady and the Patriots go down and score with you not even getting a shot. Having to sit there in that agony and then having to wait an entire offseason until you get, you know, line up when it matters again. I think that's going to motivate Mahomes more than maybe anything we've ever seen. And I believe that. I am fully on choo-choo 2019 Chiefs. No, not the locomotive. No.
Yes.
Fully on the choo-choo train for the 2019 Kansas City Chiefs. It's here, Dirk. It is officially here, whether you need to hibernate first or not. It's here.
It really is, and we've been looking forward to this for 3 years now. And really, when you look back at this season as a whole, I mean, this is kind of what made the most sense. Just this, like, once we were really great, it felt like a year where, like, we come up just short, just because, you know, first-year quarterbacks just don't get it done, like, hardly ever in the end. I don't know if a first-year quarterback's ever really won the Super Bowl. And that was kind of one of the factors that always went into the 2019 Chiefs, is that they'd have a new starting quarterback in year one, and, you know, they would be good, and they would improve a lot. I had no idea he'd be this good. But then the idea was, in year two, he'd be ready to take off, and he'd be surrounded by enough of the young talent, which is still on cheap contracts, and be supplanted by enough great, good players, enough talent, veteran talent, I should say, that comes in with the money that's available. And, you know, that's kind of the perfect storm. That's everything that led up to Chiefs 2019. And it's just the story makes sense when you look at it from the season. What didn't make sense was looking at it before the game, just thinking this Patriots team isn't good enough. Like, it's just not the best Patriots team. We're a better team than them, which is, you know, kind of went out the window. I mean, they took it to us. But from a season standpoint, I think it made all the sense in the world. It was a beautiful story. It was a beautiful season. And, you know, one last thing from Arrowhead Stadium. We got that elation of making the Super Bowl. We saw it. It only lasted about 5 or 10 seconds. But, you know, people inside that stadium and people at home too, I'm sure, had that feeling for 5 to 10 seconds of we're going to the Super Bowl. And it basically happened. And then in Chiefs fashion, the only way it could happen to Chiefs fans is that it got taken away by a penalty as silly as lining up offsides. And that's the difference between where we are now and where we want to be in the future.
A lot of people comparing it to the Royals, you know, losing a World Series and then winning it the next year. And it's, you know, apt, even though the Chiefs are not going to the Super Bowl. You know, you're right there. You're on the cusp. Mm-hmm. And I'm ready. I'm 100% ready. I mean, I think about it. 6 years ago this week, Andy Reid was, for the first time, really preparing for a season as the Kansas City Chiefs head coach by taking pictures with you and I at Ladd Peebles Stadium in Mobile, Alabama. You know, it was really early on in amateur hour history. We took a little roadie, drove ourselves down to Mobile for the Senior Bowl, and, you know, had a really great time. I'm really excited to see what kind of coverage I think all Chiefs fans are able to get from, like, the full team of guys at Arrowhead Pride down there looking at that. I think that this offseason for a lot of us is going to be kind of therapeutic because we're going to have so much hope going into a new season with very little like thorn that we're carrying, whether it's feeling like we just don't have enough because of Alex or, you know, Alex and other combined factors. We are going to be able to spend this entire offseason excited and looking forward to watching Patrick Mahomes again. And I think it's going to be a really pivotal offseason. I think it's going to be a lot of really important decisions. And as time goes on, as we, you know, get ready for free agency in March and we get ready for the draft at the end of April, I know that we'll talk some more. And so I don't want to bear too much, but I'll tell you this. This will be my tease before we go into hibernation mode here on Amateur Hour. I don't want this Chiefs team to, after being so close to potentially winning a Super Bowl, think that they got to bring the band back together. I want this to be the start of a new era and to see Brett Veach and Andy Reid show the willingness to truly build this team around Patrick Mahomes. And that's going to mean making some tough decisions, but I want them to make those tough decisions instead of preserving, you know, what currently exists. I am ready to turn the page and turn the corner into a new era of Chiefs football led by Patrick Mahomes.
Hell yeah. And my goal that I stated before the playoffs was I wanted the Chiefs to establish themselves as a power going forward. And I thought that took at least one playoff win, and it took Patrick Mahomes to show that he was great on the big stage. And I think we did both of those things. I think we will be a free agent destination for a lot of players, whether they're looking to come here for 1 year to boost their value or come here at the end of their career to get a ring. I think players will want to be here. And I think the Chiefs have seen what the Rams did, and it worked. I mean, they went to the playoffs they went to the Super Bowl using kind of this same philosophy. So, I mean, here's their chance to do it. Here's a team that's done it, and it worked. I mean, everything is right there on the table for the Chiefs to take full advantage of Mahomes' rookie deal, all the other players' rookie deals, and everything else moving forward. Like, it's just the time is now.
Recruiting starts this week down in Orlando as Pat Mahomes and a few of his buddies are at the Pro Bowl. And I don't really know if any of those Pro Bowlers are, you know, entering some undrafted free agency. But I'm sure Pat's talking up how great the barbecue in Kansas City is and the fan base and Arrowhead Stadium and everything else. And I think that he is going to be the key recruiting tool for what's going to be a really busy, really fun, really exciting offseason in Kansas City. Dirk, do you have any final thoughts?
No, I'm still here for Andy, man. Was not planning on rewatching the game at all. The TV just turned on I actually did turn the TV on. It just didn't just turn on itself. And it happened to be on the Chiefs Patriots in the fourth quarter last night. And so I watched it, and every shot of Andy Reid, man, my heart just ached for him. I know a lot of people are just like, I didn't care about that because he had a chance to change it and he didn't. But you know, the man did what he could. He is flawed. He is not a perfect head coach. But I think he deserves one ultimately. And I hope he gets it. So I just want to give a quick shout to Andy. And that's it. That's it. I'm ready to close the book on what was a fantastic, maybe the best Chiefs season of my lifetime. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I mean, maybe the expectations were a little bit higher than some of those surprise seasons in there. So those were a little bit more, you know, kind of out of nowhere. But I think in totality with everything that Mahomes has shown, I think this was probably the best season of my Chiefs lifetime.
It was probably my favorite season as a Chiefs fan, too, because there's so much hope, you know, at the beginning and we're still feeling it at the end. And it really feels like the beginning of something. You know, we had a tough end, but it feels like the beginning of something great. So folks, this has been Amateur Hour. Season 7 is officially complete, and I'm looking forward to taking some time off a little bit. We'll probably talk to you guys before free agency, but I doubt in between then, you know, we'll maybe do some tweets. I might write a little something. Maybe Dirk will do something. I don't know.
We said this last year, and then like we kept making big moves. We traded Alex Smith out of nowhere, and then we traded Marcus Peters out of nowhere. So it was just like, so if stuff like that happens, obviously we will hop on and do a show. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, it's time off. It's time to prepare for the offseason, baby. Time to get that plan together.
Well, folks, this has been Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. He's his Dirkness. Thanks again for an amazing year. Again, like, are you kidding me? We went to fucking Mexico City thanks to you guys. What?
Hey, we can go again next year.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Play no it. Chance. No yeah. chance.
Not doing it. Not doing it. I mean, you know, paypal.me/.
Yeah.
If you guys want to do it, I will go back to Mexico City.
Go fund us.
Yeah, I will stay in the exact same Airbnb, and I'll eat the same meals. I'll do it all. We'll do it up. All right. So shout out to everybody, Pinche Gringo down in Mexico City for having a great time with us. But mainly each and every one of you guys and Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and, Dirk's new dog Peanut. This is Amateur Hour. Ryan's got all, he says Dirk. And this is Jim Croce.
Jim Crow. Jim Crow log.
Dirk. This is like another primary example of one of those things where Josh Briscoe has to ask me about, you know, you referencing the Trail of Tears. And I'm like, you know, Dirk's brand is like just not knowing. It's just being like completely harmless. And he might say something that you're like, is that what you said? Is that what you just said? But like, no one actually gets offended because they're like, it's all right. That's just dirt.
It's because I know of things. I don't know about things, but I know things exist. I know they're out there and people talk about them, but I don't care enough to learn about them.
Know of, but not about. No,
it's yes. True. Ah, D, just line up on the right side of the fucking ball. Come on, man.